people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to stall way the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go down Fairs another tier, and about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. I-5, the I-10. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The 605, the 101, the 101, the 101, the I-10, the 210, the 605, the 101, the 405, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The red light.
Hey, welcome to Los Angeles Nisa. I'm your host, Edward Solis, and call us at 800-893-9562. Exciting week. We just came off some great episodes. Last Thursday was our very first installation of the Record Store Day series. It's available at the archive, where you can search iTunes. We had Rick Tyner from
San Diego, California, M3 Records. I might get her from Razor and Tie, A&R at Razor and Tie, for the first installation of Record Store Day. And last Saturday, we did a Boyle Heights episode with the people and family and owners of the famous La Mascota. They were very, very, very kind to bring us tons of food. And we didn't even ask for it. They just brought trays of food and wanted us to eat it and talk about it on the air. So that was pretty easy. And those are up now at iTunes and SkidRowStudios.com. So we got an interesting guest tonight. A gentleman, a very productive gentleman. I just posted all of his published work. Well, a nice handful of his published work on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Tom Neely, he's going to be up in about a minute here. And I think all the Misfits and Black Flag fans know what I'm talking about. Henry and Glenn Forever. It's there's a lot to it, so we're going to get to it in a little bit here. And next week, make sure you catch us on April 15th. We're going to be facilitating a nice interview on Los Angeles Nista with one of the stars of Loiter Squad, the adult film, or the adult swim. You see where my mind's at. The adult swim series, Loiter Squad. A gentleman by the name of Dark Shark from South Central. He's going to be coming in, and he's a big fan favorite. And on 422 Earth Day, we got Alyssa Walker from Gelato Baby. But my in-studio guest is here. He's right in front of me at 12 p.m., 12 o'clock. I'm looking right at him. Tom Neely, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great, man. Thanks for making it happen. I appreciate that.
Sure.
So you're actually not from Los Angeles.
Not originally, no. I grew up in Paris, Texas.
Paris, Texas. And where's the nearest major city from Paris, Texas?
It's about 2 hours northeast of Dallas on the Oklahoma border.
Right. And that's where, in your younger years, that's where you discovered music.
Yeah.
What was your first record?
My very first record was Kiss's Love Gun.
Nice.
My brother and I pooled our piggy bank money together and bought it at Walmart when I was 3 years old.
So you got it on vinyl?
Yep. Still have it on vinyl.
For a great artwork, right?
Cover, yeah.
That's probably my favorite album cover. I think it's like it's really gothy, and when you stare at it, there's a lot of detail. That's probably the most detailed Kiss record, probably.
All the ladies laying on the stairs.
Yeah, and the pillars and all that.
I think the version there may have been like a Walmart promo or something, but it came with a puzzle of the cover, and I remember like laying around putting together that puzzle while listening to the record all the time.
Right, and. Thinking back in those days, like what was the intensity? I mean, was it intense for you to listen to it for the first time as far as the artwork and the music itself? Did it change your life?
Yeah, pretty much. I've been obsessed with music ever since, pretty much. But I mean, yeah, they were comic book superheroes with music. So
right.
What's not to love?
Exactly. Did you ever see them?
I didn't get to see them until the 90s. I saw them on their second reunion tour, I think.
Okay.
Second or third reunion tour. I've seen them like 4 or 5 times since in the last 10 years. So
cool. Now tell me, like, I mean, that must have been your intro to music, but when did you start going deep into like the underground stuff?
Well, I grew up, my brother was 6 years older than me. So until he went off to college, I pretty much listened to whatever he listened to because he was my idol. So at that point, it was a lot of hair metal, a lot of early 80s, Poison, Motley Crue, Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi was my first concert with Cinderella opening, and that was...
Cinderella Night Songs, heavy record.
Oh, yeah.
Serious record.
Still one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. It's still one of the... It's still good.
Yeah. But then when my brother went off to college, I started getting into stuff on my own around the sixth grade. I remember I was at a church camp one summer, and I was the only skateboarder, the only kid skating around at church camp. And I ran into these other kids that were near the camp, just in the neighborhood, and was skating with them one afternoon. And one of them gave me a dubbed tape that on one side was the Misfits, on the other side was the Cure.
All right.
And the first time I heard Green Hell and Last Caress, I was like, this is the most evil thing I've ever heard.
So that moment was a catalyst of that word to just diving into that world.
Yeah, that pretty much brought me and made me a full-on metalhead and punk from then on. Like, that's all I wanted to hear.
Did you ever vibe off the Cure side at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love all that stuff. I mean, I have pretty diverse tastes, but there was nothing like hearing Last Caress for the first time. Like, I grew up in a very small kind of Christian cowboy town where you know, you hear something that evil and it just melts your brain and you're like, ah, I feel so evil for listening to this, but I like it.
You're so, like, I got to hose myself off. This is bad. So anyways, I mean, so how old were you when you entered that world with the Misfits?
That was sixth grade. So was that like 11, something like 10 or 11?
All right. So 11, you're 11 years old.
Yeah.
And did you really get into like Sam Hain and follow Glenn into Danzig and
I didn't find out about Sam Hain until later, like college, actually. But I was into Danzig and everything. I started watching the Headbangers Ball religiously back then. And pretty much my Saturday night when I was in junior high and high school was I would sit around just drawing comics and watching Headbangers Ball and Night Flight until as late as it would go on. So that was every Saturday, just drawing comics and listening to metal.
Now, as far as your love for art and creating your own art and designing album covers, and we're going to get into all that, and your published work here, your books, when did you actually start picking up something and start drawing?
I don't remember not drawing, really. When I was a kid, I would spend more time drawing my toys than playing with them, so that's what my mom
So you'd actually said, stand so. Them up and draw them?
Yeah, I always wanted to be drawing. Didn't really get serious about it, thinking that it was something I could do until probably around sixth or seventh grade, and started to get serious about wanting to be a cartoonist and do comic books and animation and stuff. So,
did you ever get like proactive at school, like enter contests or anything? Were you that like competitive about it, or were you just doing it on a committed level?
No, it was more of like my own thing. I mean, I did do the art fairs and stuff like that, and you know, my teachers would encourage me to do stuff, but it was more just like my own personal pursuit. I wasn't really competitive about it. There wasn't really that many other artists. There was one other artist in high school that was like kind of my rival, and this guy Trenton Doyle Hancock, who's actually a pretty famous painter now.
Really?
And so I think he won the rivalry. he's kind of all over the world now, but I'm coming in close second.
Like some highbrow fine art?
Yeah. He's a pretty amazing artist. So
That's interesting. So both of you came out of that little town in Texas.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys were feeding off each other, you know, like,
No,
I'm going to beat you. No, I'm going to beat you.
We would have contests to see who could draw the best Ninja Turtles and stuff like that.
That's cool. Should make a comic about him.
Mm-hmm.
No, just kidding. So anyways, let's talk about when you made the move to Los Angeles. How long have you been here for?
I moved to LA in 2000.
So 13 years.
Yeah.
Time flies, right?
Yeah, it really does.
Have you been through any earthquakes yet?
Yeah, a few. No real big ones.
Nothing really shake you up or nothing? Let's get right back to it.
Yeah. I think the last one knocked a couple of toys off my shelf, but that's about it.
As far as coming from, you know, Texas, did you, as far as geographically and the weather, do you think it's much nicer than Texas?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Going back to Texas in the summer is like walking around a sauna. You just like walk outside and you're drenched in sweat.
So humid
instantly.
And dry, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I love California weather. I don't know.
So you're here to stay.
Yeah.
We're not going to lose you.
I can leave.
Back to Texas anytime soon, right?
No. For years I was flirting with moving to Portland, but then I spent a couple of winters there, and I was like, nope.
Too gray.
Yeah.
No matter how metal anyone is or how hardcore or how evil, everyone still likes the sunshine.
Yep.
And I could go down the checklist.
And who can argue with having a barbecue on a Sunday day in January?
Yeah. Why not? You know, it's, cold drinks and an ice chest.
Yep.
Barbecue some
food. My back home is shoveling snow, and I'm
exactly.
Barbecuing.
People are shoveling snow just to get out of their driveway.
Yeah.
How's that? You know, so
I remember doing that, but
yeah, so it really is a great place to live. So, you know, as far as you being here for 13 years, did you really move here to do more in the artist world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I went to art school in San Francisco for 2 years before. And while I was there, I was going to school for painting and fine arts, but
what school did you go to?
San Francisco Art Institute. But I started teaching myself animation and more like illustration types skills to hopefully get a job other than working at an art supply store. So I don't know, around that time I had some friends working at Disney and they got me a job down here. So I moved down, worked for Disney for a couple of years and then left to freelance and pursue making my own work.
More, well, so. When you're at Disney, can you see what you were working on? Like what
mostly
projects?
Mostly like website stuff. Mm. And, I was doing, it was in the early before the end of the .com boom. I
okay.
was doing a lot of web animation and stuff like that. I still do a lot of that freelance now, but yeah.
As far as the album cover world, how many have you done so far?
Oh, that's hard to say. Because I have, when I first moved here, I was friends with a guy named Jim Freak who ran a small label called Teenicide Records. And I did all of their record covers. But there are a lot of really small releases for like Silver Lake local punk bands and stuff like that. I must have done like a dozen or so for them. And then later around 2006, I think, I met Aaron Turner from Isis and Hydrahead Records, and we became friends and started doing some work for them. And he introduced me to some other bands, so I ended up working with Isis and Wolves in the Throne Room and the Melvins, and more recently this new band, The Witches of God, that I just finished a cover for. But it's really kind of more of a sparse thing. I don't really pursue that full time because I'd rather work with bands that I really like.
So you don't put, you know, do you need cover art? Contact me. It's not like that at all.
It's more like if
word
it's
of
a
mouth.
Band I like.
And you like, you'll pursue
I'll go,
it.
I'll pursue them, or if they sure. like me, they'll find me. And if it's a mutual collaboration where we can both have fun doing it, then that's ideal, you know.
And that makes total sense. Doing it on a professional level, of course, you know, it's word of mouth. It's like a studio would operate.
Right.
You know, so when we get back, we're going to take a quick break. Tom Neely brought his own playlist. This is direct from Tom's personal picks, his fresh cuts. But what we're going to do is we're going to come back and we're going to get into the Henry and Glenn Forever phenomenon. All right. And talk about that. Take it away, Tom.
Let's get together, we can get hot. No more too You've got me, girl, on the run around, run around, got me all around town. You've got me, girl, on the run around, and it's a get me down, lady. If you wanna find love, then you look no further, for I'm gonna be your only searching.
Welcome back to Los Angeles Nista, my in-studio guest, Tom Neely. So, Tom, thanks for that clear-cut picture of your childhood and how you got into art and music. And, there's no doubt that right now you're very known for something that's circulating out there in the music and publishing, world, the comic world. This thing you put together called Henry and Glenn Forever.
Yeah,
and it's Henry Rollins, Black Flag, and Glenn Danzig, the Misfits.
Supposedly,
you're right. Right, Henry and Glenn. So, I want to know. There's a huge buzz on this. There's been a lot of people talking. It seems like Henry and Glenn have gone on record saying that they don't really want to support it or open it and read it. But let me ask you, how did this spawn? Tell the story, the backstory to this.
It started off with, I have an artist collective, me and three of my friends, Scott Nobles, LaVon Jahanian, and Jen Stevens, and we were an artist collective called Igloo Tornado, and we all do different kinds of artwork, but we would have like group shows together and basically get together and, critique each other's work and talk about work or, just drink beers and talk about art. And so we had had a couple of good art shows together, but we were thinking about like collaborating on some kind of book at some point, and we hadn't figured out what we would do it. And then one night we were at Bigfoot Lodge over a night of too many beers, and just like doodling on napkins and talking about ideas and stuff. And Jen Stevens.
Hold on 1 second. So okay. It was born at Bigfoot Lodge in Los Feliz.
Yep.
Okay. So that's monumental. I mean, that's where the seed was planted.
Yep. It happened.
It was conceived.
Jen Stevens stood up and said, like, there should be some kind of book that's like Tom of Finland, but with Henry Rollins and Glenn Danzig. And I was just like, yes, we're going to do that. Like, we can't not do that. So we just kind of just started there, right there, like drawing these ideas on napkins and whatever. And we'd get together every couple of weeks and, you know, hash out a few more ideas. And it was really just a dumb fluke that, you know, lightning strikes your head and it's chocolate and peanut butter all in one. And like, all right, let's go with this.
So from the evening that you were at Bigfoot Lodge and conceived the idea, when was the, how long did it take to put it together?
Originally, we did it just as we didn't think it was more than just like a dumb joke that we were doing. So we just did like, we printed off like 100 Xeroxed copies that we took to, I was already self-publishing my other comics. And so I was going to San Diego Comic-Con. This is like 2005. We published like 100 Xeroxed copies of the first zine, which was just like 30 of the little strips that were in the book that everybody knows now. So we had it there, and that was the beginning. And we had so much good response, like everybody freaking out about it, that we decided to do some more, and then ended up pitching it to my friend Joe Beal, who runs Microcosm Publishing and Cantankerous Titles, two small punk rock publishing houses based in Portland and Illinois. And he loved the idea and wanted to turn it into a more full book. So then that was 2008, I believe. We put out the one with the green cover that's the most familiar, that people are most familiar with, which is actually the third incarnation of the first book. So, confusing timeline, but the official first book came out in 2008 after a couple of zine versions.
So what's been, I mean, I know for a fact, like talking to you before, people like Thurston Moore have ordered this from you, mm-hmm. and, you know, other notable people in music. So, you know, it's definitely a universal message, this Henry and Glenn Forever item. Now, what's been your feedback from the fans?
From my experience, I've gotten nothing but like positive feedback from fans. I mean, both comics and music people seem to really genuinely love it. I've heard rumors that there are a lot of hardcore Danzig fans that have no sense of humor and hate it and want my head on a stick. But I haven't had any direct contact with that kind of interaction with anybody.
Right, right.
But in like 2008 at Comic-Con, there were some rumors on message boards that somebody was going to try to jump me or something, but nothing ever happened.
So. Right. So it was that, it got kind of, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to say sketchy, but people were, you were hearing the positive and the negative,
so to say.
So, okay, so when was Henry and Glenn Forever released?
That version with the green cover was released in 2008. So that was now, the beginning of it.
Now, do you know if Henry Rollins has read it?
I don't know if he's read it, but I know he's definitely aware of it because he, well, first of all, at 2005 when we had the self-published zine version, he was at Comic-Con. Henry Rollins was at Comic-Con doing a DVD signing with IFC channel or something.
Okay.
And Jen Stevens went and waited in line and asked him to sign a copy of it. And so when he did that, he looked at it and he was like, what is this? And Jen was like, well, it's a comic about you and Glenn Danzig. He's like, what, are we gay in this? And Jen was like, no, well, you're domestic partners. And then he said, has Glenn seen this? Trust me, he would not be amused. And so
those were exact words.
Those were his words. So we put that as a blurb on the back cover of the original book. So, no, the green one. And there was a Nardwar interview sometime last year. Nardwar interviewed Henry Rollins and caught him on film, asked him point blank about the book. And he said, well, I'm aware of it. He gave a very politician-y answer. He's like, I've seen the cover, but I've not looked at the contents. And you know, but I believe in First Amendment rights. So, you know, whatever they want to do. But he's like, and when people come up to me and ask me to sign copies of the book, I sign it like a good monkey. And he says something like that. And so he's aware of it. He seems to be good humored about it.
Right.
Glenn,
right.
On the other hand.
Well, let's talk about that. There's a music journalist by the name of Jay Bennett,
mm-hmm.
who does a lot of writing. I think he does a lot of stuff for Decibel, right? And plays in a great band.
Mm-hmm.
And that band.
Eyes of Gemini.
Yeah. Eyes of Gemini. Yep. so he actually brought it up to Glenn after the interview that he conducted for Decibel and Glenn Danzig.
As luck would have it, that book came out about a month before Death Red Sabbath, Danzig's last album came out. So.
Tell the story because it's all back here.
Yeah. So Jay told me he was going to be interviewing Danzig at his house, and we had the book, and I was like, can we send a copy with you? And he's like, okay. He was a little hesitant about it. But so we signed and gift wrapped a copy for him and asked Jay to deliver it for us. And so as Jay actually called me on his way home from the interview, and he was like really bummed out. It's like,
really?
It's like, man, I don't know. It was a weird reaction. It's like, what happened? He's like, I'm going to send you a transcript of what happened. And he described it. It was just like, he brought it up at the end of the interview, and he said it just really kind of bummed Glenn out when he realized what it was. So then Jay actually sent me a transcript of Glenn's reaction, and I made a one-page comic strip of his reaction using all direct quotes from him. And he says something like, you know, we're typical internet generation losers or something like that.
Yeah. It's actually
a perfect reaction.
Yeah. So it starts from the top, right?
Yeah.
So Glenn says, you know, and I told Rolling Stone, go fuck yourself. You should have wanted to talk to me when the Misfits were around. Right. So here's Jay. Have you heard about that comic book, Henry and Glenn Forever? Glenn. No. What is it? It's about Henry and me hanging out. No, living together, says Jay. And Glenn is so sad. And it says, oh, it's like a gay comic. So you can just, you know, take it from there. I mean, people have to pick it up and read it for themselves.
Yeah,
it's really natural. I mean, it's real. It happened.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's all in back of the second one, right?
Yeah. So we just started last year. A second volume is being serialized as a mini series.
Why would they do that? I mean, no one wants to be talked about like in a bad way, right? But when you put yourself out there on a big platform.
He's kind of turned himself into a cartoon character over the years. I mean, I love him. He's like one of my favorite
musicians. But whether it's an actor or a musician or anyone in the public eye, you're going to be a target.
Yeah.
It's going to be for good words and good and bad words. And it's going to be what it is. And that's the way it is. You can't just, you know, just got to deflect and move forward. So I think if anyone at that level harnesses it and just gets so upset, anchors in and replays it in their head and just bums them out. It's like, you know what, man?
It just gives me more fuel.
Go make another record. Just go make another record and be happy, you know?
Yeah.
That's all I could say. It's like, you know, I think if you point out the bad, more people are going to point out the bad as well. I think everyone's stoked on it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the real fans are not stupid. The real fans are middle-aged people that know the deal.
Yeah. There are some detractors, but you know, as far as my experience has been, most people are really positive about it. So
right. Now let's talk about the sequel.
Yeah. So we started the sequel book is actually being serialized as a 4-issue miniseries of comics. The first issue just came out last year. And I opened it up to asking all these other cartoonists and artists that I like to be involved in it and give their own spin on what happens. So it's getting weirder. The universe is expanding. There's like Benjamin Mara did a great story in the first issue where they're camping in the woods and then they go fight a satanic cult that's led by Lita Ford. And it's very Rambo style. The second issue has a story by Mark Rudolph, who's an illustrator for Decibel Magazine and other sources. He does his own comics as well. And he did this great story where it's sort of like a psychedelic vision quest. I think Roy Orbison is his spirit guide or something. Josh Bayer did a story that takes them from their beginning all the way into like 40 years into the future, and they've mutated into these monsters in a post-apocalyptic world. And so there's all kinds of crazy stuff happening. And then I'm serializing my own story, which is basically about their little domestic squabbles. And
so it's a spinoff.
Glenn's mother comes to live with them. So
so it's a total spinoff.
Right.
Right, right. So, I mean, you've never run into Glenn yourself about this?
Nope. Not yet.
Right, right. And have you ever run into anyone in any of his bands? I mean, this is L.A. Everyone lives here, I think.
Yeah, well, by coincidence, last summer I was on a plane from, I believe I was coming back from Baltimore to L.A. It was Southwest Airlines, where you get to pick your own seats. And so I got on the plane and I picked this aisle seat, and there was a empty seat between me and the other person. I was like, great, I hope it stays empty. Until this tall, lanky, gothy-looking guy with long hair and glasses comes back and is like, can I sit there? I was like, yeah, sure. So I didn't really pay attention at first, but as he started talking to the lady next to him, and as he's dropping a little bit, and I heard him say he was a drummer. So then at one point I leaned over and asked him, I was like, hey, are you a drummer? I'm a big fan of music. Who do you play for? He's like, oh, I play in this little band called Samhain. Have you heard of them? And I was like, are you kidding me? It's like one of my favorite bands of all time. And he's like, oh, really cool. I'm London May. It's nice to meet you. And I was like, holy shit, you're London May. And you just sat beside me on the plane. So we got to talking a little bit. And at one point he asked me, he's like, are you in a band? He's like, you look like you play music. I was like, no, but I do comics. I'm a cartoonist. And I do a lot of artwork for bands and stuff too. So he's like, oh, cool. What kind of comics do you do? And so first I told him about my other books, my other graphic novels and stuff. And leading up to the point where then I was like, so it's like, this one book might bum you out, but have you heard about a book called Henry and Glenn Forever? And I got really serious, and he looked at me over the rim of his glasses real serious. And was like, are you the one that did that book?
Oh, man.
I was like, yeah.
And you're sitting right next to him.
Right next to him. And he puts his head in his hands for like about 30 seconds and lets out this deep sigh. And I was like, oh, shit, he's about to punch me in the face. But then he sat up, he exhaled really loud, and he goes, all right, all things happen for a reason. We're sitting next to each other on a plane for 5 hours. Let's talk about this. I was like, wow. Okay, cool. So I was like, so what do you think? And he's like, it is not cool that you did that book. And then he proceeded to give me a very harsh but polite critique of everything that he thought was wrong with it, to which I refuted all of his points. I tried to talk to him about it and try to present my side of it. And one of the first things I asked him was like, have you actually read it, or are you basing it on the cover? And he's like, no, I've read it a couple of times. And I was like, so you can tell we're actually fans. You know, we love the Misfits and Black Flag and Danzig and everything. He's like, yeah, I can tell you're fans, but I'll tell you this, you're the worst kind of fans we could have. I was like, why is that? He's like, because you want to tear us apart. You want to, you know, make fun of us and everything. I was like, well, isn't the one of the first tenets of punk rock to kill your idols?
Right.
And he was like, oh, well, I don't know. But then we talked for, you know, a while, and we ended up bonding over just talking about other kinds of music and our mutual love of the Misfits and Glenn Danzig. And he kind of warmed up to me, and at one point we were talking about the Pentagram documentary, and I was telling him how much I wish they would make a Danzig documentary, and he was like, yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen, because Danzig doesn't want his secrets revealed and stuff. So, but yeah, it was a really interesting plane ride, and he was very nice, but I don't think he was happy to have met me at all.
Right. Wow. I mean, that's close to the source, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that must have been awkward.
It was very awkward.
That's very interesting. I actually know London personally, and he is a very sweet, nice guy. He does a lot of positive things, and you know, he's a positive guy. That's all I have to say about him. But that's really interesting. I wonder if maybe he told Glenn he met you, and sure. Or maybe didn't even bring it up, or just said, hey, you know, the guy wasn't too bad. Like, you know.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So when's the new one coming out?
The issue 2 of the second volume should be out in May. I think I'm going to be premiering it at a bookstore in Baltimore the night before Maryland Death Fest.
Oh, gotcha. Why don't you plug your site and let everyone know how to get your all your books?
Well, my own self-publishing books and my artwork is at iwilldestroyyou.com.
Okay.
That's my personal website and publishing house. And then Henry and Glenn.
Can they buy the stuff there?
Yeah, you can get all my books there. And I have rock posters and art prints and stuff I've made as well. And then the Henry and Glenn books are available through Microcosm Publishing and Cantankerous Titles. Cantankerous is my publisher and Microcosm is the distributor. So
very nice. And then locally in Los Angeles, what stores carry your work?
Henry and Glenn is in all kinds of places. But my other books are mostly at Secret Headquarters, Meltdown, and Skylight. You know, some of the smaller indie-minded bookstores that
very cool
carry stuff like that. So, but Henry and Glenn, you can find it at most record stores and hipster bookstores and all kinds. I run into it everywhere. It's crazy.
That's great. And what about your pending projects? I mean, we know you also do album artwork. What's mm-hmm. coming up that will be entering the marketplace with your art on it?
A new album by a new band called Witches of God.
Yep.
Which I think you are...
Identities have to be concealed for this one.
Okay.
Well, for their identities.
Yeah.
But I'm involved. I know Wino's... I actually sang on the record.
Yeah.
Wino's on it. And that was recorded at Seahorse Sounds, an mm-hmm. amazing studio in downtown LA, on a Neve board.
Yeah.
So there is life after Sound City. But as far as your metal night you do at Footsie's, let's talk mm-hmm. about that, because that's right by the goal line
yep.
in Highland Park. And that's what this show is all about, trying to get people to go car free. So you know what? I'm going to, at the end of the show, I'm going to instruct everyone how to get to this place.
Oh, that's good.
No. So Footsie's, okay. That's a bar in Highland Park, and you have your own night called Heavy Tuesdays.
Yeah, it's me and Jay Bennett of Decibel.
Yep.
And Scott Carlson of Repulsion and various other bands, Cathedral and whatnot. The three of us started it and asked us along to do a metal night every Tuesday at Footsie's. So
and it's free, right?
Yeah, it's free, and it's every Tuesday from 10 to 2.
You guys have guest DJs spinning metal all night?
Yeah, we have guest DJs almost every week, you know, various local bands and musicians and, you know, sometimes record release parties. We had a Lightning Swords of Death record release party last month that was, like, probably one of our biggest nights ever. It was, like, totally packed in there that night. Holy Grail just had a record release party with us last week. So we get a lot of, and, you know, but even on off nights, just, like, random, you know, great metal and punk musicians just hanging out. Like, you know, I've met the guys from Unsane and Blake Judd of Knock Mystium.
Right. To hang out but there. It's definitely a destination yeah. on Tuesday nights. Like,
so it's a fun metal night.
If you want to go.
It's a big metal, heavy metal clubhouse.
Yeah. Heavy metal treehouse, right? No, yeah. No, it's like, you know, it's if you want to go listen to great music and, you know, go throw some beers back at a place where, you want to be surrounded with like-minded people who are very immersed in the music and culture and probably, you know, are running a label or journalists or artists or, you know, really in doing it, mm-hmm. DIY. That's the hangout on Tuesday nights. And the cool thing is it's right by the Goal Line station.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
I know.
There.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, if you get your tap card out, $5 a day pass, you could go there and then after you go somewhere else. Unlimited, you know.
You don't have to drunk drive.
You don't have to worry about drinking and driving because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Yep.
So how long have you been doing that for?
I think a little more than 2 years now. So
pretty consistent.
Yeah. We haven't missed a Tuesday yet.
And we spoke about this, excuse me, on a break, but you've had some bands play there. Very sparsely. It's not a consistent thing, right?
Yeah, not on Tuesdays, but they do. They have had some, we've had some band nights. Holy Grail played there once on a Saturday. Harasser played there once. In the summer, Footsie's often they'll do like some Saturday summer live shows in their packed parking lot, and we've DJed a few of those.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, what's going down there tomorrow?
I should know, but I don't know if we have. I'm not sure if we have a guest tomorrow.
Any guest tomorrow? Well, you'll be DJing.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. Wait. I'm sorry. It's Eyes of Gemini night because they are about to go on tour with Ghost.
Nice.
And so tomorrow night is, I think, their last night in town. So we're having them guest DJ.
Very cool. So. Very cool. So when we get back, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to talk about Tom Neely's favorite places to eat, go see art, see live music in Los Angeles. But Tom's going to select some tracks for everyone, and we'll let him take it away. We'll be back soon.
Yeah. sky. And if you ever disrespect the bus, I'm at Black and Ninja. Yeah, I think he's been looking for this one for a long time. Yeah. Come on.
I came to bring the pain, more hard to the brain. Yeah, I'm busting that ass again. I burn like acid rain, that ass is lame. These niggas try to see how I come, ash your dame. Ain't it evident I'm heading in? Yes. Mess for president, being held with gasoline drawers just for the hell of it. And I ain't delicate, flows hot as kettle getting after it. Fucking with that, you must be celibate. Just a little, got a stack, we can sip a little hash in the middle. Where that? In the middle, yes, mommy. If you got a fat ass, make it jiggle, yep. Put it in my next video shot by Little X. Sending me up, gon' work till there ain't any left. I'm trying to get what I'm worth, but not a penny less. Bank,
come on.
Bank cash,
come on.
Everybody do it with your stank ass.
Come on.
Make it rob somebody, slap somebody, stop somebody, slap somebody. Make you wanna step to the bar, sip the party. Wild ass pass in the club, we in the party. Brooklyn,
come on.
Shelly,
come on.
Queensbridge down the Long Island,
come on.
Bronx nigga,
come on.
Manhattan,
come on.
Each and every hood, what's happening?
Come on.
Watch me back your shit up. I hope you people pull up and pick up and back your shit up. Homie, it's time to move. While I'm seeing right through you, let me relieve you with all of your figures. See the streets and never believe in you niggas.
Come on.
Go ahead and babble. You can watch me patiently waiting. Aim and attack you. Instead, I'ma let one of my bitches slap you. I invite you and your niggas to try to feel a wrath of the unruly awakening of a sleeping giant.
That is
the once I give you the pressure and then I apply it. And then you're breathing to stop it. Totally quiet. Captain in the ship, so call me the pilot. I'll leave you and your crew on Kalamami diet.
Off on a nigga!
Just like a herd of a thousand cattle that'll travel over your face and frazzle your shit. Shots worse than the brick and then be torturing you and then get to repping and get to stepping, nigga. This shit'll make you rob somebody,
what?
Grab somebody,
what?
Stomp somebody,
what?
Slap somebody,
what?
Make you wanna step to the bar and sip a Bacardi. Wild out, spaz in the club, we in the party.
What?
Brooklyn,
come on.
Shaolin,
come on.
Queensbridge down the Long Island,
come on.
Bronx, nigga,
come on.
Manhattan,
come on.
Each and every hood, what's happening?
Come on.
About to lose it, my nigga, and you know we gon' get real stupid.
My nigga, see the police coming,
what?
Fly man coming,
what?
Street niggas ready to riot and start dumbing.
What?
I let us see it whenever you and your man frontin'.
What?
See your members after you, this man something.
What?
Yo, Pimp C, killing these cowards. Whack niggas get pimp slapped. Give me some powder. Click clack, one in your back. Now think about it. Get back, run in your gap. I can't allow
well,
it.
Whatever, nigga.
Set it
you
off.
You know we're seeing the drill guard. The street need niggas like me and you, guard.
Hey,
I think what I'm seeing from here, we got a wildin', yo. Logical, we should've did this shit a long time
I
ago.
I got that shit that make rappers shit in they shoe.
Nasty MC.
I spit flows and spit in they food.
Man, don't tempt me.
I'm nothing like a curious child.
I'm simply
a boy in the hood with furious
this
styles.
This shit'll make you rob somebody.
What?
Slap somebody.
What?
Stomp somebody.
What?
Slap somebody.
What?
Make you wanna step to the bar, sip a Bacardi.
Wild ass pass in the club, we in the party.
What?
Brooklyn,
come on.
Sally,
come on.
Queensbridge down the Long Island,
come on.
Bronx nigga,
come on.
Manhattan,
come on.
Each and every hood, what's happening?
Come on.
You jump in front of my car when you know all the time.
Come on.
9 miles an hour, girl, is the speed I drive.
Hey, yo, God.
Yeah, Lord.
Flip my Wu-Tang, man. Ain't that some shit?
That's some shit. Absolutely, bust a bust.
Master Cal,
yeah.
I'm not the only soul who's accused of hit and run. Tire tracks all across your back. I can see you had your fun, but
what the teeth of it. together.
Sitting on the hillside, watching all the people die. I'll feel much better on the other side of the moon. I believe in magic. Why? Because it is so quick. I don't need power when I'm hypnotized. Look in my eyes. What are you seeing?
I see.
How do you feel?
I feel real phony when my name is Phil. Or was that?
Hey, we're back. Welcome to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis, and the in-studio guest, Tom Neely. Tom, what's up?
Not much. I'm on the radio.
You're on the radio. Good choices, man. You got you brought a nice eclectic spread of tunes.
Yep.
It's a reflection of your collection. You got like a bunch of things happening. Lots of CDs, lots of vinyl at home.
Too much. It's too like much. Half my house is full of his stacks of music.
But that's why you're doing your heavy Tuesday at Footsie's, to like, it's an outlet for you to go share your personal collection and spin your heaviness.
Yeah, it's how I explain to people that I'm not completely a hoarder. I actually do have a reason for having all these records.
They're just not sitting there.
But it's fun to go, you know, I've always been obsessed with music, so it's fun to go and play music for other people. So
right. So plug your Heavy Tuesday event tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, it's every Tuesday night from 10 to 2. And tomorrow night we have guest DJs from the band Ides of Gemini.
Uh-huh.
As they're about to leave on tour with Ghost next week, I think.
So. Very cool. How long are they going to be gone? Ghost is a pretty buzzing band right now.
Yeah, their first night, I think, is at the... Oh, I should know this. I think it's at the El Rey here in L.A. Mm-hmm. And then, they tour most of the states for 6 weeks. So
nice. Very, very thorough tour. I mean, nice North American 6 week tour. I'm sure they're going to hit all the A markets, B markets.
Yep.
And play some nice size rooms. All
they keep it professional.
Yeah. So before we get into the traditional Los Angeles Nista public transportation awareness and geography of LA County, let's get into some of your other projects.
Mm-hmm.
You got some other comics in the making.
Yeah, I'm working on this new book now that'll be my next project after I finish the Henry England series. It's called The Humans, and it's I'm collaborating with a good friend of mine, Keenan Marshall Keller, who also self-publishes in comics and art zines under his company, Drippy Bone Books.
Very cool.
But it's this weird story he's come up with that's sort of, I mean, the easiest way to describe it doesn't really do it credit, but it's kind of like Planet of the Apes meets Easy Rider meets Mad Max. So gangs of biker ape men beating each other up and having crazy adventures, but it's going to, in a post-apocalyptic world that is actually 1970 America, Bakersfield, California.
1970 America, Bakersfield.
Yeah, it's sort of like a 70s exploitation.
Let me tell you, let me just branch off really quick and give you an example of something. I'm really into Slayer, mm-hmm. and I'm really into Pantera,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really into Morbid Angel.
Oh, my favorite.
There was a tour where all three of those bands were on the road together. Uh-huh. That was the package. Slayer, Pantera, and Morbid Angel. And I think this band called... actually, Static X was on that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like Tony Campos, the bassist, but I don't like them. I don't like Static X, the music. But I'm a fan of Tony. You don't like his hair?
Isn't he the guy that has, like, the 3 feet of hair?
I think so. Yeah. That's the... the front man.
Yeah.
It's like high hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird hair. So I'm not a fan of Static X. I'm not a fan of the music, but I'm a fan of Tony. I think I like Tony's work ethic. He plays like an assassino, and he's played in Prong and all these Soulfly, I think. Or like one of the Max Cavalera bands. And I like his vibe, like what he does as a bass player. So anyways, yeah, I remember I went to the San Diego show, LA show, which was Long Beach Arena. And I want to say Bakersfield.
Yeah.
All three. you know, San Diego and Long Beach was civilized in the fact where, you know, it was bonkers.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Open floor, whatever. There was complete mayhem. I actually had a friend, one of my cousin's friends, just get beaten down by the Long Beach Police Department at that show. So bad that, like, there was a lawsuit and all this. It was, like, horrendous. So that's how crazy that show was. Slayer, yeah. Pantera, Morbid Angel, Long Beach Arena. Everyone's just going for it. Bakersfield, on the other hand, it was like if there was a Thunderdome and all these characters, that's what the audience looked like. It was, like, just complete, like... It was like, okay, this was like, 13 years ago or something. I'm just like sitting there and it's like, first of all, where do these people come from? So that's the first thing. Second of all is, what are they on?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's a lot of meth labs out there.
Yeah.
You know, now who would win as far as making meth? Would it be, who would win, Hemet or Bakersfield? That could be in the comic, right?
Yeah, rival meth gang.
Instead of a chili cook-off, they have a meth cook-off. No, but anyways, I'm just trying to be a comedian right now. Monkeys on meth. I'm just trying to be a comedian right now. But anyways, no, seriously, I mean, that's my Bakersfield experience. But anyways, so it takes place in Bakersfield, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, Bakersfield, a mythological Bakersfield in 1970, which is post-apocalyptic. So none of it really makes sense, but it's going to be one of the most fun things to draw because it's ape men riding motorcycles, and that's going to be awesome.
My second greatest Bakersfield experience of all time, 2000,
mm-hmm.
I'm writing for a magazine called Mean Street in Los Angeles, and Kiss is on the farewell tour, which is the third reunion. Yeah. And Ted Nugent and Skid Row are opening. And the publicist at Island Def Jam was like, I guess that Universal Island was like under the same, you know, roof. And she goes, I know you did a Kiss request to interview them for Mean Street. If you want to interview them, I could get you one free ticket to Bakersfield and All Access and time with them to interview them. So little did I know.
That'd be awesome.
It was like a really early call time. You know, not early. It was like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, it's around there. And I waited for a while, and I think I went back to when Ted Nugent was playing, and Gene came out of makeup into the interview with me backstage in makeup,
yeah,
minutes before they went on.
Awesome.
So that's like two yin and yangs. It's the where do they come from? Dynamic,
yeah.
Pantera and Slayer. Then it's the interviewing Kiss and makeup, and like being in that world, and then like being cut off by Doc McGee saying, "All right, that's enough," and then like step out, and then they take a picture with the mayor, and then they walk onto stage, and I saw that. I was just like, "Wow, okay, I'm there." I was in Kiss world for a minute, so it's like, how could you top that, right?
Did you get any good answers out of them?
Oh yeah, I'll give you a hard copy. I got a stack of them still, but I think that those are my memories of Bakersfield. So we'll see what happens when you come out with the comic. And
yeah, I think I'm gonna have to go visit Bakersfield more.
You gotta live it.
Yeah,
you gotta live it.
I've been to the Crystal Palace.
Jerry's Pizza awesome. Was the DIY venue.
Yeah,
it's a pizza parlor with a brick basement, and that's where bands play. And I played there a few times, and yeah, it's great. So anyways, let's get into some of the things about LA that you like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you a public transportation guy at all? Have you taken the Gold Line or the Red Line or the bus anywhere? Or is that just not on your radar?
But not very often because there's not an easy outlet from my neighborhood.
Sure.
So I wish there was a train.
You're in Atwater, right?
Yeah.
And there's not even a really easy bus route that is frequent,
yeah,
and easy. And it's and those are some of the topics we want to bring up because, you know, this is all relevant information, you know, about the state of Los Angeles, you know, the state of public transportation in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm,
and how they can make things much better here for people and offer people the knowledge to use it, because a lot of people don't even know it exists.
Right.
These subways. I mean, you're not too familiar with them either, yeah, right? Yeah.
I've read them a few times, but it's right, like I have to drive to there
right,
first.
So. Right, right. And you would think a city like Los Angeles, the second biggest city in the United States, would provide and facilitate bus lines, at least, that get you to these trains. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case. So it's really interesting because in some of the suburbs on Saturdays and Sundays, the buses run once an hour. So it's like, how do you operate, man? It's just, right, you know, and sometimes a bus breaks down or it doesn't come and you're there for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, though, if you could install a routine within your day-to-day life with work and whatever else you're involved in, you know, like for instance, I mean, the Red Line, I mean, that's downtown to North Hollywood. I mean, mm-hmm, in between it's, you know, it's downtown. It's right by City Hall. It's, you know, it's by the Pershing Square station, right by La Cita, you know, Beverly and, Vermont. And then, you know, the K-Town area and, mm-hmm, and then on up it's Los Feliz and East Hollywood and Hollywood. And you could get close to West Hollywood by getting off on Highland and then Universal North Hollywood. So you could, you know, if you had a routine within that vicinity, it would be useful.
Yeah,
is a point. And if that was useful, it would cost you $5 a day, unlimited. So that's like minus the wear and tear, minus the stress and the gas. But I think for a lot of people, they don't even know there's a red line. They don't know there's a goal line.
Yep.
And I think people get turned off when they're somewhat far and they can't get there.
Mm-hmm.
That's your case, right? That's your story.
Yeah.
So the times you have gone out, I mean, probably for convenience, you probably haven't been able to really use it.
No, not as much. It's more of like a novelty. Let's go try to ride the train and see where we can go.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, let's talk about any some of your favorite spots, galleries.
Yep.
Let's go there.
Galleries, I go to a lot of, I have some friends who work in some galleries in Culver City, which is, always
what are
takes
the names?
Forever to get there. A good friend of mine works at Mark Moore Gallery. It's on Washington and... it's Washington, just east of La Cienega, but I forget which that cross street is. Robertson, maybe?
Yeah.
So right around that area.
What kind of stuff do they facilitate?
They're fine arts, a lot of painting, sculpture, different kind of stuff. I usually go check it out because my friend works there. But and there's other galleries in that area too, like Bowman Poe and Corey Helford Gallery. And there's this big gallery strip right along Washington now that's popped up in the last 5 years.
That's great. I mean, that's
weekend opens.
You're the first guy on this show that has mentioned that area.
Mm-hmm.
So that is great. And
it's the new thriving art scene for LA. So.
Yeah, and I think when we install the podcast tomorrow, we're going to be able to put in the description and really get people inspired to maybe take the expo line out there, because I know the expo line runs out there. But, it's not exactly easy. And I think that, there's people got to connect the dots with themselves, depending where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. But what about live music venues?
We were talking about the Black Castle earlier.
You like that place?
Yeah.
Is that's considered South Central, right? Or is it Inglewood?
I think it's Inglewood-ish. I don't know.
Inglewood?
It's hard to say.
I'm
less familiar with those areas.
I think it's South Central, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean that's a venue that is like total DIY. You know, it's what you see is what you get,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the bigger black metal bands would rather play there than some tight, uptight place.
Yeah,
what are some of the shows you've seen there that are memorable?
Of course, then my mind goes blank. Just like when you ask me what bands I'm listening to lately. Too much. I've only
overload.
Been there a couple of times, but it's escaping me at the moment. Sorry.
Well, that's fine. Let's talk Mexican food.
Yeah.
All right. LA's the place for Mexican food. Do you agree?
Oh yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
Jeremy, are you in there? Get on here really quick. All right, everyone. This is Jeremy, the owner of Skid Row Studios.
What's up?
Yeah, this is the East Coast guy right here, and. Him and I had, we've been doing like a lot of restaurant episodes and having people bring food in and we kind of critique it and all that. And we were just discussing Saturday that I think personally, I really think that the weather, the geography and the Mexican food is what keeps people here. I mean, it's you're serious about it too, right? It's great.
Yeah, no, I've lived in New York City, other places on the East Coast, New Jersey, whatever, and you can't find Mexican food there like you can here in Los Angeles. I don't know what, but it's the same, people say the same thing about pizza here.
And right.
I don't know what it is because, logically you would think just do the same thing that you do here in LA, but do it over there.
Put it together in the oven.
It doesn't work out. It is geography somehow, or culture, or something like that. That
I think there's a certain intent behind it.
Yeah,
but it's not like whether it's good or bad. It's just like it's done a certain way that's been passed on.
I was speaking to my sister the other day, who still lives in Pennsylvania, and she still will bring up the time she visited here in LA and had tacos off a taco truck downtown here. And
So she was blown away by that?
Yeah, completely blown away. She said she's never had food like that ever since that point.
Tom, do you do taco trucks or you don't subscribe to that?
Well, it's a little more difficult for me because I'm vegan. So it's if I can find one that will have options, then I'm there.
But there's a lot of new vegan Mexican places popping up.
Yeah,
there's a place called
vegan-friendly
Guisados.
Guisados?
They'll definitely do some...
There's one... with Echo Park, right?
Yeah, that one opened recently.
And I just saw one over the weekend in Boyle Heights.
The Boyle Heights one is the original.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're actually opening one probably sometime this summer right over at the Arcade Building off of Broadway, like 6th and Broadway over there.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
That place is awesome.
I agree. I think, like, you know, I'm asking Tom, you know, we're just talking about, you know, what does he like? And he shared his galleries and so forth. But public transportation, you know, for him isn't easy to use because of where he's located. But, like, I just think that it's going to get to the point now. Like, I mean, the more conversations and the more episodes I do, Mexican food comes up. Because when people are from out of town, like, I don't get it anywhere else but here. And I think you're an example of that. You know, like, you agree.
Yeah.
Completely. I think there's so many options and it's all good. And to me, it's like, it's pretty simple to make. It's like, how can you fuck up a cup of coffee? How can you fuck up Mexican food? You know what I mean? You got to be an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, the only way you're going to fuck up Mexican in L.A. is if you go to some lame chain restaurant like a Chevy's or something. Like, that's fucked up Mexican food. But anywhere else, it's Acapulco. Amazing.
And priced high. So what about, as far as getting back to Tom, what about vegan restaurants? What are some of your favorite vegan restaurants?
Lately my favorite's been Sage in Echo Park. It's on,
I've heard of that place.
Sunset and Logan, I think. It's awesome.
Well, I know. I mean, if people want to go there, they could take the #2 bus from downtown or come in the opposite way from UCLA, West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And then that #2 bus is 24 hours. It's one of the only few MTA 24 hour lines and it'll drop you off right there. I know that's that, but cool. Like on the menu, what's your favorite?
Let's see. Well, they have awesome. They have really good vegan tacos. They have like a fake street taco that's made with jackfruit instead of meat. That's okay. Really, it's like jackfruit, kind of shredded like pork. It's really good.
And then, like, would you say
brunch? Their brunch menu. They have a pretty awesome like vegan Benedict Toko Benedict thing. That's
someone told me about the brunch there. Is it vegan only or is it both?
It's all vegan there, so yeah.
Oh, it's a vegan place.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they have a vegan ice cream parlor inside too.
How long have you been vegan?
Vegan for 13 years and vegetarian for 6 years before that.
So. Do you find that in Los Angeles it's getting easier for vegan options?
Oh, yeah. When I moved here, there were like 3 or 4, there may be 2 restaurants that were all vegan and then like a few, you know, handful of friendly places. But now it seems like everybody's friendly. And there's more.
There's no more attitude behind
up all the time.
Like, there's no attitude behind it, right?
No,
like,
yeah
sure.
Like,
what do you want?
And like places like Golden Road Brewery Pub and Mohawk Bend and stuff like that are opening up where they're like they have both vegan and non-vegan, and that's awesome because I don't have that many vegan friends. So
right. How are you? How deep are you in the vegan culture? Like, do you know? Like what places, like fast food chains, have a vegan item, or what from the market that's boxed is vegan?
I know a lot of it. I'm very aware of it for myself, but it's a lot of label reading constantly. So
and constantly informing yourself, right?
Yeah, just keeping on top of it. So
I have a question for you. I've always wanted to know what breakfast cereals in a box, like Raisin Bran or Captain Crunch, are vegan.
Ooh. I'm not sure because I don't.
It's a good really question, do, right? I saw you
that
like.
That's pretty good. You know, I want to say the Peanut Butter Crunch. I think might be, but don't quote me on that. I don't really eat many of those though. Like I eat like granola and boring stuff.
Boring. I mean, so a basic package of granola that's like considered vegan. I mean, if you have almond milk with it, right? That's vegan.
Yeah. Some have. Honey and stuff in them, and some vegans don't eat honey. But
gotcha.
But yeah.
But as far as I mean, the substitutes for different items for different cuisines, whether it's Mexican or Asian or Italian, it seems like all of that is just becoming wider availability now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so people like you that are vegan can actually connect with more restaurants because it's welcoming for that for you,
yeah,
for that option,
yeah, especially in LA.
Now, is it more expensive?
No, it really isn't. I mean, a lot of people think that is, but it's not. And it's, I mean, the most expensive vegan restaurant in town is Real Food Daily, and then and they have like three branches, but it's compared to like if you went out for like a steak dinner, it's like, you know, you're gonna be paying a lot. I mean, it's usually like $20 a person, and that's like the most expensive vegan place in town. So.
Right.
But yeah, I don't find it more expensive. It's just it's just different. So
yeah, what about like bookstores? I mean, being someone who publishes or work. Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite, like, you know, mom and pop bookstores in LA County?
Well, like Secret Headquarters Comic Shop and
that's right next to Vacation.
Yeah, yeah, next to Vacation Vinyl. That's where a lot of my income goes, to those two stores. Skylight Books in Los Feliz, Meltdown Comics in Hollywood are mm-hmm. some of the ones that I frequent a lot because they carry my stuff and I check in on them a lot. Another one I like is another comic shop I like is House of Secrets in Burbank on Olive.
Right.
What else? Downtown, the last bookstore downtown is great.
That is right off the Line 18 mm-hmm. bus route. So easy to get to. You can stand in front of my house right over the 6th Street Bridge, and it'll just like take you over the bridge right to the front door. And they do like a lot of readings now. Like,
yeah.
KRS-One was just there. Mm-hmm. They have a vinyl section now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't notice
yeah.
that.
it's very like classic catalog. It's yeah. not like nothing new or anything like that. But it's like, you know, it's jazz and it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's classic used stuff. Like you'll find a Hall & Oates record.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. I just had this conversation over the weekend. There is nothing wrong with old school Hall & Oates.
I love Hall & Oates. They're in Henry England forever too.
I know. This is keeps getting better. I have this vision that at some point the next installment of Henry England forever will have Glenn's blood in the red ink. Just like our heroes.
Maybe.
How could that happen, though? How could that happen? We can make amends and convince them. Just, you know, take a little sample so we can pour it in. That'd be a good publicity stunt. Well, with that being said, that wraps it up, Tom. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Tom, plug your website again where people could buy your work.
It's iwilldestroyyou.com.
And tell us about Heavy Tuesday, your metal night tomorrow.
Yeah, Heavy Tuesday, every Tuesday, 10 to 2 at Footsie's Bar, which is 2640 North Figueroa.
Very cool.
So, yep.
All right, well, that's a wrap.
Thank you.
Thank you.